It's Sunday morning, and that wonderfully relaxed feeling of a long, lazy day lingers in the air. If you want to make the moment last, may I suggest the perfect solution? The Martin Sheen Podcast. Join me, your host, Martin Sheen, for beautifully crafted 20-minute programs filled with never-before-heard stories of my life, along with personal reflections and poetry that inspires. The Martin Sheen Podcast is the perfect Sunday refresh, a chance to take a deep breath, relax, and know that the stress of Monday may be just around the corner, but not here, not now. So make this your weekly moment of calm as we explore faith, hope, love, and what it means to be human. And know this, this journey is ever unfolding as I invite you to see what's next with me, Martin Sheen, and thank you.
MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein. This is Spy Talk. This week, we're going to take a look at the shock and disorientation the children of spies face when they learn that one or both of their parents are not who they said they are. To that end, my guest today is Johanna McCloy, herself the daughter of a CIA undercover operations officer. McCloy is a writer, editor, and accomplished actress by trade, but this week she popped up on Spy Talk's radar for a very personal essay. She wrote pegged on the plight of two kids of a Russian couple unmasked as spies in Slovenia and deported to Moscow. The kids were unwitting pieces in that monumental prisoner swap that brought Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkowitz and many others home and sent a Russian assassin back to Moscow. The object of McCloy's distress was the fact that the two kids of the spies, who masked themselves as Argentinian, had no idea that they were children of Russians. The 11-year-old girl and 8-year-old boy looked stunned and confused, according to one account, when they got off the plane in Moscow. They didn't speak Russian. They thought they were Argentine. Putin greeted them in Spanish with buenas noches. This news really impacted me, McCloy wrote on her Substack page, because she too had experienced the extreme disorientation that came from learning when she was a teenager that her own father was a spy, in this case for the CIA. As a child of a spy, she wrote, I experienced my fair share of mind-boggling recalibrations surrounding my father and our family experiences when I found out that my father worked as an undercover CIA officer. The trauma faced by the Russian kids is light years more intense than her own, she quickly added. But there were similarities too. Naturally, we were eager to know more about Johanna's experience, if only because, or because it will happen, in scores of CIA families this year, a number of whom are Spy Talk subscribers. Johanna McCloy, I'm so happy that you've joined us on the Spy Talk podcast today on really such short notice, too. And the reason is I was really taken by your very moving essay the other day on your own Substack account about the Russian children who were expelled with their parents. They didn't know they were Russian. They were expelled to Moscow, and they only learned, I guess, on the plane or when they arrived at the airport that they were, in fact, Russian.
Mm-hmm.
So you were moved to write that essay because you grew up in a CIA family yourself. And tell me why this disturbed you so much, the story about the Russian kids learning at the last second that their family, that their parents were really spies. Why did that ring a bell for you?
Well, I went through that in my own way, but it was far less extreme in that my father worked as an undercover officer for the CIA. I did not know that. I found out when I was 15, and I as you know, most people can probably imagine, had, you know, you have to calibrate the truth with your experience. And I found myself having to think about all my memories and all the experiences that we'd had and put it through a new filter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, put it through the new filter of, okay, Daddy was a spy. Okay, Daddy was a spy there. Okay, so he was a spy there. And ongoing, you know. And it felt like when he told me, it really did feel at the time like I imagined being told you've been adopted. Or it's a sense of not really understanding your own reality and feeling like you're in some kind of a funny, you know, one of those little, you know, fun houses in an amusement park where everything's upside down and you don't quite understand.
I can totally relate. I found out at age 40 plus that my dad was not my biological father. And so I've gone through a similar process of recalibrating, the word you use, recalibrating every event in my life from then forward. And it still pops into my head. Let me ask you, your father was undercover as a non-official CIA officer. So he lived under some sort of commercial cover. Right. Posing as a business manager. So can you tell me what kind of business he posed as?
Yeah, and you know, and that's something that I'm always very quick to emphasize, that he wasn't really posing. He held two jobs.
Right, of course. So, he worked his government job.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that, you know, because that's the, you know, the understanding people have is that it's a cover, right? Which it is. Mm-hmm. But he legitimately held that job. So he had a day job, and the people he worked with had no idea mm-hmm. that he had this other very real, mm-hmm. more important job, as it were. Mm-hmm. So he did work for corporations, multinational corporations, and he held the job, and the people he worked with didn't have any, you know, awareness. There'd be an immediate supervisor or the head of the company would know, mm-hmm. but that would be it. So his secretary didn't know, the people that he worked with didn't know. And then his work for the CIA was done off hours, basically in the evenings in hotel rooms with, you know, his agents and the people that he recruited and that kind of thing.
Longtime Spy Talk listeners and readers would know that I had a very similar experience as a case officer in Vietnam. I went to a job every day, happened to be with a Navy civilian office. And I did my skullduggery outside the office.
Yeah.
And none of my coworkers knew, or I hope they didn't know, that I was a spy. But tell me about the conversation that you eventually had with your dad when he said, sort of a CIA version of the birds and the bees.
Saying, yeah.
You know, honey, I'm not a real estate agent or an import-export executive or whatever he was. Right. I'm actually a spy for the CIA. Can you tell us about that conversation?
Yeah. We had just come back from the States. We lived in Tokyo at the time. We'd been living there for 5 years. My mother was in the States still. She was helping my sister get into college. My brother was already in college. So we came back to Tokyo because my dad had to start his job and I had to go start my junior year in high school. Went to the American school in Japan. Mm-hmm. And he said the night we arrived, we went out for dinner. And while we were having dinner, he said, he got very serious, which was not really, he never looked that serious. It was a little scary. He said, I need to tell you something this evening when we get home. And I said, And I said, well, what is it?
You know, divorce?
Right. No, exactly. Like someone, is someone sick? You know, and he said, we're not going to talk about it right now. And we're not talking about it right now. It was just so strange. Mm. So we get home and he says, I'm going to go upstairs. I'll let you know when I'm ready. And I'm thinking, ready? What's he getting ready for? I was freaking out a little bit, actually.
I
picked up the phone and I called a friend of mine. And I started to whisper saying, my father's acting really strange. And my father he was upstairs and he could hear me, and he said, "Get off the phone." And now I knew something really serious was going to be told. And I knew that my life was going to change. I had no idea what it was going to be, but so I went upstairs, and he basically got himself a cocktail and had his cigarette and was just comfortable. He was wearing his yukata. He liked to wear his yukata, his Japanese robe. And so I'm looking, and he's sitting on the bed. He's like, "Sit at the end of the bed." I sit on the end of the bed. And he says, "So what do I do for a living?" And I'm thinking, well, what does that have to do with anything? "Oh, you're an international businessman. You work for an American company." He says, "Yes, that's true. I do. But I have another job." I said, "Oh." I said, "Yes, I work for the CIA. And, you know, you don't just take that in immediately. It takes a few beats to even understand what he just says, you know. And I immediately, being 15 years old and knowing nothing, thought that was just like the most outrageous thing. Well, it was the most outrageous thing I'd ever heard. But I was like, "Oh, my God, you're like Sean Connery running around." And he's like, he got a kick out of that. But he said, "No, not at all." And then he proceeded. We spent about an hour and a half. And he proceeded to tell me a lot. I mean, he wasn't divulging any secrets or you know, the ins and outs of what he was doing per se, but he explained what he did and how, and he was very emphatic, and he wouldn't let me go until such time as I understood I was not to talk about this, period. You know,
you were sworn to secrecy.
I was sworn to secrecy.
You were brought into the conspiracy. So yeah. In effect, you had to have a cover job yourself.
That's right. That's exactly right.
What year was this, Joanna?
This was 1980, the summer of 1980.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was still a lot of anti-war, anti-government ferment in the air there because of Vietnam and so on. And there had been the church committee hearings on assassinations and coup d'etats and so on, mind-altering drugs. The whole chamber of horrors had come out just not long before that. Did you have a reaction to him, a negative reaction to him being in the CIA?
No, you know, in the beginning, I didn't have enough awareness. I really hadn't paid attention to that. I was, sure. You know, a teenager living in my own little world. So no, I didn't. In fact, what I did think was I was proud. I felt a lot of pride because he had been walking around, you know, as a boring, so-called boring businessman. You know, no one really talked to him about his work. No one really cared about his work. And he was just, he wore a suit and went to work in the day. And he went on a lot of business trips. Well, you know, now I know they weren't all business trips, but to find out that he was far more important in certain respects, because he was sharing, like one of the things he did is he showed me his foreign passport. He had several passports with different IDs. With different names.
So he brought them out.
He did.
Showed him like a deck of cards.
He did. I mean, I think he had fun doing that, but at the same time, he really wanted to scare me a little bit. And I think by scaring me, that would prevent me from thinking it would be fun in games to maybe secretly tell a friend or, you know, because it's good scoop, you know.
Did you have siblings?
I do. I have an older brother and sister. And this was what was also interesting. They were each told, I think at 16, and they never spilled the beans. Mm. And I do remember maybe a year before, 2 years before, they both knew I did not. And they were in my sister's bedroom talking very quietly. And I walked by and I you know, just being the little sister, popped in like, you know, "What are you guys talking about?" And they both looked at me and said, "Out." And there was a sense of, this isn't like kids just being silly. This was like something, what are you talking about? So this is one of those memories, you know, that you go back to and think, oh, God, they knew and they were talking about it. And I had no idea. Yeah. It's just, It's just so weird.
Once you were read in, I suppose you had some animated conversations with your older siblings. Like, damn you never told me. How come?
Yeah, except they were in college. We were in Tokyo one more year, which was an interesting year for various reasons, knowing about my father. But then my senior year in high school, he got transferred to Venezuela. So I spent my senior year in high school in Caracas. And there are some hairy stories there. And because I was in the know, my mother confided in me. And I was like her support system. My father didn't come home one night. He was supposed to come home one night. And it really scared her. And she really thought he had been meeting a Russian operative, and there had been some question as to whether or not he was a double agent or not, or what was happening there. And so she didn't know the protocol. She was trying to remember the protocol. Who do I call? What do I do? And so it was like 3 a.m. And we were both up. I had school the next day. And we're trying to figure out what to do. She had a phone number that she was supposed to call. She called the number and used some kind of code language. And the person on the other end had no idea what she was talking about.
Yeah, like 3 days of the Condor. You know, Robert Redford calls in and gives his concocted name and a code number or something like that.
Yeah, and so I listened to her.
Your mother couldn't
thinking,
remember.
Yes, exactly. She's like,
it's
got to
be on a piece of paper.
Right. And the person on the other end was like, who is this calling me at 3 a.m, you know?
It's like trying to find your Wi-Fi password. Anyway, you tell an interesting story in your essay about you and a friend kind of doing a wink-wink.
Yeah.
Coded conversation with each other to sort of say, you know, hey, we're in the same family business.
That's
tell
right.
us about that.
Yeah, that was really interesting. It was the year that I found out about my father. We were in Tokyo, and it was a high school party, you know, just at a friend's house, milling about in the living room, everybody doing their thing. And he was a football player, not someone I knew very well. I don't know exactly how it started, but my father had clued me into a couple of people in my class and in school whose fathers did, you know, various jobs for the CIA, mostly with cover, as opposed to my father. He was the only one I knew that was, you know, what do they
under
say?
Official cover.
On the outside is how he put it, as opposed to on the inside.
Your dad.
Yeah.
And your friend's father was under official cover as a diplomat or something.
Yeah, he worked for the government. I don't remember exactly what his job was. But somewhere along the line, we started kind of making gestures each time we noted an individual whose father worked for the government. And I thought, is he telling me what I think he's telling me about this guy? And I would like nod yes, and he would nod yes, and then we'd go, are we saying, and we'd start getting really excited, like, are we communicating about something here or not? And after a couple of those, and then, you know, he'd nod to me and he'd nod yes, and then I'd nod to him and I'd nod yes. And all of a sudden we knew. And it was just like, we had to talk about it. And we went into the person's bedroom who was hosting the party and went into her clothes closet.
Instead of having a cigarette in secret.
Right. And we're sitting in the closet going, oh my God, your dad. Yeah, your dad too. Oh my God, how did you know? Yeah, but it was high school, you know? And so here we are in the closet and we're like, oh, what are people going to think? Oh my God, you know?
So that was kind of fun.
Yeah,
That you share the secret and you had someone to share the secret with.
Yeah.
Hey, we have to step away for a minute. Okay, we're back. Now, you know, over a decade ago, I reviewed Scott Johnson's memoir about growing up in a CIA family. It was called The Wolf and the Watchmen. And he said once he was read in that he kind of resented for some time. He and his father were close and grew closer. But after he was read in, he thought back to how his father had actually employed him in tradecraft. In other words, I think he told one story about wandering in a park in, I think, Belgrade, and, you know, servicing a dead drop, and having his child by his side in his hand sort of gave him cover that he, yeah, you know, that he was just a family in the park.
Yeah.
Did you look back and think, hey, you know, my dad used me for his operations?
You know, not so much me, but my mom was very much a collaborator. So she mm-hmm. helped him a lot. And they were
very
they were,
common.
Yeah. And she wrote a memoir about her life as the wife of an undercover CIA officer, which she tells all these stories. And they're some of them are just downright hilarious, the things that she had to do. And one of them was he wanted to know whether the guy he was meeting, Boris, a classic Russian name, in Spain, whether he was a double agent. He was going to meet him. So he asked my mom to follow him before they rendezvous, just to see if he was going to do anything, you know, nefarious or questionable on the streets of Spain. She wore a disguise, and she writes about how silly the whole thing was. But my father was really sick, and he actually, he was wearing a fake mustache, which was his how he met this guy, with this whole fake mustache and everything. And he got really sick, and he threw up, and the mustache fell out into the vomit. And my mom had to try to paste it quickly back onto his face because he was about to meet this guy. It was just,
oh my God.
These stories are just, you know, like my father would say, it's more Clouseau than it is James Bond.
It can be, that's for sure. I love the title of your mother's memoir. It's called Six Car Lengths Behind an Elephant, Undercover and Overwhelmed as a CIA Wife by your mother, Lillian McCoy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's wonderful. You know, so did you answer that question of whether you were an accomplice in some of his operations?
I don't think I was. I may have.
Rethought.
I calibrated everything. Yeah. I mean, even when we went through customs that very night that he told me, we went through customs, you know, at Narita Airport in Japan. And he went off and, you know, there's residents. So there's a line for residents, which we were, even though we were gaijin, foreigner. And he seemed to purposely go to a separate line with his briefcase. And I thought, why aren't we together? Why is he going over there? What's that all about? I thought that was strange. But part of his telling to me that evening was showing me the briefcase and the hidden compartment in the briefcase.
Oh, wow.
And his files with the passports. And I put two and two together, and that was the beginning of the calibration, was even just going back a couple hours or whatever it was when we landed and thinking, oh, is that why you went to the other line? He said, yeah, I wasn't really worried about it, but I just preferred to be in another line in case something, you know, happened, or I guess in case it was checked.
After this, did your relationship with your dad change? Were you grateful that he read you in, or were you resentful that he had held the secret for all those years? How did you feel?
I was grateful. It took me a while to get over feeling deceived and not knowing the full truth, and being left out, even knowing my brother and sister were aware for a few years before I was. I just felt really isolated in that sense. But I'm really glad he did tell me, and I've talked to other spy kids that I've met.
Do you have kind of a society of spy kids?
You know, yeah, it's like we're starting a little group. but yeah, I mean, different people feel different ways. I've also talked to Peter Warmka. I don't know if you're aware of Peter Warmka. He contacted me after he read my mother's book, saying it just was so, it was like reading his own life story with his own wife and all the issues. And so we talked about it. In fact, it was on my podcast. I interviewed him and we talked about it, and he agreed that the kids knowing was something that he thought should happen, But often, you know, and I don't, you were saying, how old were you when you found out? Or
I was over 40.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. And some kids don't find out until after their parent dies, right?
The phrase I came upon, that I ascribed to my own feelings was that the ground moved beneath my feet.
Oh, yeah.
It was just shocking. I found out accidentally through a family friend who thought I knew, and I didn't.
Oh.
But anyway, get back to your story.
Well, yeah,
what we're talking about here. You thought it was outrageous. Maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, a word in your mouth, that this Russian couple who were undercover, that they hadn't told their children. But their children, Sophia was 11, is 11, and Daniel, 8. That's a little young to be read in. In fact, it's kind of a dilemma for parents to know when to tell their children, because if they're too young, they might, you know, blurt it out. They wouldn't understand it. Perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
They're too young to understand it. Or if they're like 11 or 12, they might, you know, being 11 and 12, they would blurt it, you know, go to school and blurt it out to their classmates. So they have to calibrate, to use one of your words,
right,
when to tell the children. And that, I'm sure you have some empathy for that.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I by no means thought they should have told their children. That was not my thinking. I was just really feeling for the kids. Finding out, not only, I mean, it's one thing to find out that your one parent is something that you didn't know, whatever that might be. You know, in my case, obviously, finding out my father was undercover for the CIA, but to find out both your parents spied, both your parents are a nationality that you don't even know, both your parents have different names, both your parents speak that language, and now you're landing in a country with the leader of that country greeting them and fanfare everywhere and cameras everywhere. And you just got told on the plane? I mean, fortunately, they are that young, because I know, you know, you're more adaptable. And having lived internationally, they lived in Slovenia and went to international schools. And that's how I grew up, living internationally and going to international schools. So I felt a kinship there. And Slovenia being a democratic country, now suddenly they're Russian, you know. But again, maybe the good news here is that they are on the younger side, because they don't have formed opinions about geopolitics. They weren't apparently aware of who Putin even was, which I guess at their age, why would they, maybe? That's a lot.
That it rocked their world.
Yeah.
As we say, Ken DeCleva, as you probably know, a former CIA psychologist, he said that it's good that they're young and they can adjust.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that there are children who learn their parents are spies, don't adjust well. There's got to be. Or resent their parents for keeping the secret from them. I also wonder if, especially after the Venezuela incident, was it Venezuela where your dad didn't come home?
Yeah.
Did that end well, by the way? He did come home.
No, that morning my mom insisted I go to school, and I'd been up all night. And I said, I'm not going to school. She says, oh, yes, you are. We have to keep appearances. Things have to be normal. Go to school. I'll let you know one way or the other. You'll be fine. It was just such a nerve-wracking day. It was otherworldly. You know, being at school with kids and not being able to talk to anyone about it. And then I got called out of class. Someone stepped into class and said, Johanna, you have a phone call. Well, you can imagine. I was a nervous wreck, but I had to keep my cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk into the principal's office, and he's sitting at the desk, and he hands me the phone. So he's sitting right there.
Mm.
And so I get on the phone, and it's my mother, and she says, Johanna, your father's home. Everything's fine. We'll talk when you get here. And that was that. But she didn't talk to my father for 2 days, because what had happened was he had fallen asleep.
A likely story.
Right. Right.
Well, did you then worry about your dad being in danger from then on?
Yeah, I was far more aware. It was a funny little story in my own head, you know, what he did. Not funny, but, you know, it wasn't real because I didn't see that part of him. Mm-hmm. I just knew about that part of him. And he was a very, very, just a nice guy. And he was really great with people. He was very charming. He was very empathetic.
Very, very, all these qualities, very important to be a CIA case officer.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, just really being able to read a room, you know, and but truly interested in everyone and everything. I mean, anyone we ever came upon, he just loved talking to them and hearing their stories. And so there was a, I didn't see him as like in danger because he just seemed like, I don't know, it didn't occur to me until that experience, you know, and living in Venezuela and all the things that were happening there, the corruption. Even as a kid living there, we'd have to carry cash whenever we went out in case the cops stopped us and told us, hey, look what we found in your car. And they'd present, and this happened, and they'd present, you know, a bag of cocaine or something.
What, it happened to, with you?
Yeah.
What happened?
We were, it was me and a couple of kids were in one of their cars, and a cop stopped us. And it was one of the guy who was driving the car was very familiar with the scene because he grew up there. And he said, oh, here we go. And the cop came and they rolled down the window and he said, I found this in the car. Hmm. And my friend said, that wasn't in the car. You just presented that. He said, well, I'm telling you, I found it in the car. And out comes the cash. And my friend says, would this make a difference? And he says, yeah, be on your way. And that was that. And I couldn't believe that I'd just witnessed this because I'd heard that this sort of thing happened. But that just doesn't seem real, you know, until you see it. So, yeah, for the rest of that year, we were only in Venezuela for 1 year before. And then my father retired early because this stress was just too much.
Hmm. How is he now? Is he okay?
He passed away 6 years after that.
I'm so sorry.
Sadly. Yeah. He passed away in 1986.
Was it stress related to his
work? I think so. He had an aneurysm. He, you know, he liked his alcohol. He liked his party. And he was a big smoker. So he didn't have the healthiest lifestyle. But I think the stress really just did him in. I really do.
Oh, my gosh. So sorry. Were you inspired in any way, in an ironic way or paradoxical, if that's the right word, to join CIA yourself?
You know, I was.
What
and
happened?
I think because I wanted the lifestyle I grew up with, and that was the only way that I could think that was possible. I wasn't thinking through what it meant. You know, I was being very naive, but I just adored my father. And I wanted to live, I didn't consider myself American because we had never lived in the States except 1 year before I went to college. And of all the countries I lived in, the US was the one I felt the most uncomfortable in. I didn't relate to my peers. I didn't understand, you know, I didn't have common experiences culturally. I just felt very out of sorts. So I wanted to live overseas as I had. And I figured the only way to do that would be to follow my father's footsteps. And he was so good with people. And I kind of took after him in that respect, you know. So I told him I wanted to do that at my senior year in high school when we were in Venezuela. And a friend of his who he worked with, who was a friend of the family, came to stay the night, and he said, Johanna, you're not going to bed until I've convinced you otherwise. We're going to sit down at the kitchen table, and we're going to discuss this. And he told me all the reasons, which I now know all too well, just the bad stories about how you're treated, how, you know, you're paid by the CIA. You're not paid your corporate salary. You're paid by the CIA, which is often less than what you would be paid for your corporate salary. So you're trying to pretend that you're this, you know, guy with the money, and you're not this guy with the money. Going to college was difficult because on the application, he had to write the fake salary. He wasn't eligible for grants. We lived overseas. We weren't residents of any state. So we had to pay out of state tuition anywhere we went. He got no help in that regard. and on it goes. So, you know, more and more of those stories were told, and I said I'd give it serious thought. And then, you know, I go to college and I become a little better educated. So I did meet a friend of my father's, a woman, once. My father was living in St. Louis when he passed away, and that's where I met her. And I thought about it, but that's as far as it went. I never did pursue it.
Yeah, you had really an unusual access to what the life is really like. I've talked about this from time to time on podcast or elsewhere, that people have no idea the terrible personal toll that this job can take on families, and especially women. Mm-hmm. A young woman who, you know, loves her job and is patriotic and feels like this is serving American national interests, and yet wants a personal life, wants a boyfriend, maybe many
right.
boyfriends.
Oh, yeah.
And they are severely limited in their latitude of dating and so on, much more than CIA men are. It's sad to say. It's just hypocrisy in the dealing with that from the conversations I've had with many women who have served in CIA. And you know, basically they've taken it and said, well, you know, I'm doing a national security mission, which is important, but the toll can be grievous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, marriages are strained and so on. It's a very, very difficult life. And when people have asked me about signing up for intelligence work, CIA or DOD, I've told them about, you know, you have to seriously consider
yeah.
the toll on your personal life.
Right. And that actually leads to why I edited and published my mother's memoir, because she wrote it to do right by him. Because, mm-hmm. you know, these stories are not told, and mm-hmm. he was he went through a lot, but my mother went through probably as much as his wife. And it was no picnic in any respect. And the book really reveals it, but also reveals the humor mm-hmm. of that they, if they hadn't had a sense of humor, I don't know how they would have withstood their marriage. That's really what bonded them.
Spy work can be fun too.
Yeah. You know, and that's the other thing, that in contemplating a career, I realize I don't have the ability to compartmentalize like that. I don't know how that's really doable. I'm amazed that it is doable, and it often, you know, people do it, obviously. But that wouldn't be something I think I would want to do. I think that would play too much with my mental mm-hmm. health.
It's not for everybody. Well, I urge everyone listening to read your wonderful essay, Yana, on your Substack page, which is called In This Life. It's a very moving and heartfelt essay about the toll that this work takes on children, and especially in this case that you wrote about, the Russians who were swapped back in the hostage deal to get, or the prisoner deal to get Americans out of Russian jails and some dissidents, and that their children had no idea until they got on that plane
right.
that they were actually Russians. So
mm-hmm.
thanks so much for spending the time to come on the Spy Talk podcast.
Well, thank you.
Really illuminating.
It's an honor. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. We'll be talking again in the near future, I'm sure.
Okay.
And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Be sure to check out our complete podcast archive on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, do check out the SpyTalk.co news site on Substack, where we offer a steady diet of scoops and original analyses on the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk and you'll quickly find your way there. This edition of the Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. That's it. See you around. I'm Jeff Stein.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to SpyTalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.